Hey, this is Pearls and Swine. I'm Levi. And
hey, Levi.
Travis is across from me, and John is to my right. Today, we are going to be talking about, is there actually a God? Can you actually know him? We have been talking about this probably most of our lives, but want to just kind of share some of our thoughts on that and how we came to the conclusion that there is actually a God, and we can know him. There's a story that I heard a long time ago, or a saying, maybe it is. The difference between a dog and a cat is a dog looks at you and goes, you feed me, you scratch me, you name me, you pet me, you walk with me, you discipline me, you let me outside, you must be God. A cat, on the other hand, it looks at you and goes, you feed me, you scratch me, you provide a house for me, I must be God.
So true.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to God, we have either a dog understanding or we have a cat understanding. No one functions with the understanding that there is no God. It's just, is there a power that is higher than you, or are you the God?
Mm-hmm. We all grew up in Christian homes, right?
Yes.
Ish. Christian-ish homes.
For the most part.
I look back on my faith journey, and my grandparents were super influential in that. Even before my family and I got into church regularly, we'd go visit my grandparents. And so I was exposed to that because they'd take me to church and we'd pray before meals and those kinds of things. So I think from early on in my life, I had an understanding of God, but it took me a while to figure it out for myself, to really buy into it for my own self and make my faith my own and that kind of thing. But it was probably about college time that it came to be really for me. And I think everybody at some point, you have that kind of conviction or that wrestling point in your life where you struggle, even if you were raised in a Christian home and you do have an understanding of God. But I think mostly all of us get to a point where we're like, I don't know. I don't really know. And you have those struggles and you start thinking and.
You're the only one, Travis.
Yeah. Oh, sweet. Well, I guess I will start to get my resume ready.
No, I think people all over the world struggle with the idea. You have like John Lennon. He's singing songs about, if you can only imagine, one of the most famous songs ever.
Is that a song by him? I can only imagine.
Not that one.
Okay.
Imagine.
Okay.
Imagine.
Yeah, why don't you sing that a little bit for us, John?
Imagine there's no heaven. I don't know the words.
Yeah,
but
something
I know
like that.
Okay. Something like that.
Yeah. But I think people believe that religion has caused all the wars in the world. And that is just absolutely not true. There is an encyclopedia out there, three-volume set. And
is that kind of like Wikipedia?
No. This is actually paper-bound.
Oh, I see.
Millennial. It's the Encyclopedia of War, which is really fascinating. It kind of tracks all the wars in the last 8,000 years or whatever. There's only 2% of them that have been in the name of religion. Usually it's a power struggle. It's a money struggle. And so this concept that all of the wars in the world are over religion, that's hogwash. Yeah. There's actual documented proof on this.
That is a pretty cool fact, Levi.
Yeah. I wonder if God sometimes looks down from heaven and goes, what in the name are you guys thinking? Like, who do you think made all of this thing? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
It came out of Colorado a few years back, out of the mountains, out of the west. It was awesome. One of the best things about living in Colorado for me, from a faith, spiritual perspective, was the massive mountains out there, seeing the magnitude of God's creation, being immersed in that. And I grew up in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd seen, you know, Lake Superior and northern Wisconsin, that stuff. And I was like, oh, that's cool. But you go out and you experience the vastness of the Rocky Mountain Range and like how small you are comparatively to some of that stuff. And that was really one of those moments where I looked around like, yeah, wow, God, there had to be something greater than humanity make all of this.
You get right at one of the things that's always been compelling to me. And just to fill in a little bit of background, even with what you were saying about growing up in a context where God was an assumption, that was very much true for me. And it wasn't until I got into college where I started to be given good reasons to believe in God that I went, oh, there are really good reasons. I just accepted it. But I've had a very similar kind of experience in Colorado, standing on a mountain peak thinking, I'm not that big a deal. You look around you and you go, oh, I'm tiny. somebody could be at the bottom and they wouldn't even see me up here. Yeah. So that kind of thing, to me, demands something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So the vastness of the universe and the world has always been something that has made me go, okay, there has to be something else out there.
The cosmological argument for God is what you're kind of talking about. It's standing on Brockway Mountain in October peak color and going, how in the world did this just happen?
Yeah.
Type of a thing. There's a professor by the name of Dr. John Lennox. He was a professor of mathematics and philosophy at the University of Oxford. You know, one of the top five, maybe, universities, right behind Michigan Tech, of course.
Go Huskies.
He is a follower of Jesus, and in his book talks about why he believes there is a creator, and you don't have to leave your brain at the door. In one part of the book, he talks about Nobel Prize winners. He said that science and God mix together well because it's a discovery of what God already knows and what God has already designed, and actually should increase your faith and not deplete your faith in all of this. And he talks about the Nobel Prize winners. Between 1901 and 2000, over 60% of the Nobel Prize winners were Christians. He says Christianity is not at odds with science. It's actually at odds with a worldview, the worldview that the world is void of God. That's what Christianity is at odds with. It's not at odds with science and that you can know certain things about the world.
Well, I'm no Michigan Tech professor, nor am I a scientist, but my kids have this really awesome devotion that we got from Lou Giglio, Indescribable. And that does exactly that. It reconciles science and creation together.
Oh, that's great.
Points to all these really cool things. It's great for if you've got young kids. I highly recommend it. But it's great for just checking in with like all the stuff that God has done and how science actually supports and backs up a creator for all of the things that are around us and all the, you know, the physics and the fusions and all the cosmos. I don't want to get too scientific on everybody so that they don't follow with me, but I'm pointing towards that direction.
You could, though.
I could.
I don't want to. Thank you for your self-control.
Well, the cosmological argument, you know, there's biblical writers that have talked about it.
Yeah.
You know, why are the heavens here? How did you put this in the sky? All of those types of things. But you also have Aristotle, a famous philosopher, writing about that. He says, everything has a cause. There must have been a first cause. And that this first cause was itself uncaused, which is actually a very Christian thought, because we believe that God created the world, but he was not created. Yeah. He was without creation, which it kind of is mind-blowing in and of itself if you start to think of something that is not created. But why do we even know that there's creation? Why do we even think in those terms? Is because we are created, and there is something about that that we can't get around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that whole idea that all of creation is dependent on something, and then all of a sudden to wrap our minds around this idea that there had to be something that started that was independent. First time I heard that idea that everything has a cause, and then you got to go back to the what's the beginning of that, and you have to find this being that has no cause. I remember sitting in class hearing that for the first time, and I kind of was like, whoa.
Dude.
Whoa, man.
Yeah.
But it's, for me personally, that's one of the more helpful things for me to remember when I'm struggling with, would God allow this or could God cause this or whatever. It brings me back to, oh yeah, I can't understand everything because I'm finite and I'm trying to understand infinite things, and the distance between the two we can't even describe.
Yeah, the Apostle Paul talks about these invisible qualities that we can identify within the world. You don't even really have to be a scientist. Why does the sun come up every day?
Right.
Why do things grow? Why do leaves go from green to a different beautiful color in the fall, then fall off and go dormant and then come back? You know, why does all of that stuff happen? In Romans 1:19, he says, what may be known about God is plain to them because God has made it plain to them. And he's talking about people here. And he says, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power, his divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. You should know and understand, and you should be able to see these things. And we all do. That's the crazy thing. We all do.
Well, we were just up at Keweenaw for that retreat, that UP lead team pastoral retreat. And we were talking, I think, John, you were there. We were talking with one of the other dudes, and he was like, yeah, telling us about this really cool place down in Wisconsin. It was kind of like a setting like Brockway Mountain. Everybody goes out there to watch the sunset. And they sit out their lawn chairs and they do their thing. And he's like, every single time that you're out there, just as the sun goes down under the horizon, people just start clapping. And he's like, some of them don't even realize, but they are worshiping the creator when they do that. And he was just, he painted a beautiful word picture way better than I could. But it's true. Yeah. Like unseen things that we understand from what we see is the creator.
So there's a cosmological argument, but there's also the teleological argument, telos coming from the Greek, referring to purpose, design and purpose. And so you have an iPhone in front of you, and the thought of that just coming into creation is kind of pretty crazy in and of itself to think that.
Shake and bake, you dump a bunch of things in a bag, and out comes your iPhone.
Right, but there's a design and a purpose that we see being played out in it. Steve Jobs, creator of it with a bunch of design people, came up with one of the greatest contraptions ever, or maybe one of the worst contraptions ever. And so the sun rising and the sun setting, the little intricate things that are happening that we don't even see, we just planted a bunch of trees at the church. And I was just thinking about, as we're watering these things, there's this whole process going on for that thing to get its roots to go down. But there's little bugs under there. There's little worms under there. There's all of these things.
There was a toad out there, but my kids brought it inside today.
There's a toad out there. There's all these things kind of playing in to the ecosystem to create and to help to make that work. And that design of how things work, it really is hard for me. It would take a lot of faith for me to believe that there's not a creator of that, that it just happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a famous analogy for this is the watchmaker.
Yeah.
This same kind of idea. You know, it's like you're walking along in the desert and you find a pocket watch and pick it up, and you assume that just over millions and millions of years, the sand and the wind and the sun and everything played together and started eventually to form some gears and some screws and the metal. You get the idea is that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It couldn't happen for you to pick that up, like you said, to pick that up and it immediately assume, well, this just happened.
Right.
This just all came together and happened and fit together and all the gears and all the pieces and everything. And it started telling time. And that's kind of crazy to imagine. And that's an infinitely, again, smaller level than what we're talking about when we talk about the universe. We talk about the human body. I mean, you know, you hear examples about the human eye as a complex lens is still an amazing feat of technology. If we were to create that.
The psalmist talks about this in chapter 19. It says, the heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth, their words to the ends of the world. It's the Fievel song, if you will, you know, somewhere out there. We're underneath the same blue sky. Mm. You want to sing that one for us now?
Try to remember.
Yeah.
It was one of my favorites.
It is great.
I loved that movie.
Yeah, it was great. But every day, God is proclaiming, He is here. He is here. He is here. Look what I did. Look what I did for you. So you have the cosmological argument. You also have, closely related to that, is the teleological argument. But we also have the ethical argument. If you have some type of morality, well, where does that understanding of morality come from?
Yeah.
How does it get there? How does it, we can go big on this one. We could talk about Hitler. Hitler, he's heavily, heavily influenced by Nietzsche.
Yeah.
Heavily influenced by Nietzsche. And so if what he is saying is true, then what he's doing is actually superior, because he's really playing out in a fast form the survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
Yet we all go, no, that's crazy talk. But why do we go?
Yeah. Who decided what he did was wrong?
Right. Because his truth has to be just as valid as our truth.
Yeah.
Unless there is some foundational truth that is guiding and directing this.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, all truth is, well, everyone's concept of truth has to be just as valid.
Mm-hmm.
That's problematic.
It is. Because you have to constantly go back to, well, who decides?
Yeah, which one is best?
Right.
Which one do we follow?
Who wins? Who wins in the argument if we're saying, you know, I think that, mm-hmm. yeah, it's really problematic.
I think that's the cool thing with, you know, Scripture, God's Word. He gives us that. That's another way that we, as Christians, know that God reveals himself to us. And I was just thinking back on, like, the story of Cain and Abel. Out there in the field, he kills his brother, and like he answers, "Dad, where's your brother?" "Well, who am I? My brother's keeper." Like he knows not to say, "Like I killed my brother." Like he had this ingrained core value of human life, and he knew what he did was wrong.
Because we're created in the image
exactly.
of God, and we're living in an apocalypse in one sense because the fall has happened. God said this, the world that was here was very, very good. It still has good things and remnants of that goodness that God created, and yet we also know that it's not good.
Yeah, we're in the middle of a restoration process
absolutely.
At best if we're
– yeah, absolutely. And so we wrestle – all of us wrestle with right and wrong at some level.
Yeah.
And in order to do the wrong thing, we have to justify it in our hearts. And the reason we have to justify it in our hearts is because the Scriptures tell us that the law was written on our hearts.
Yeah.
The Apostle Paul talks about this in Romans. He says, they show that the requirements of the law are written on their hearts, their consciences also bearing witness, and their thoughts sometimes accusing them, and at other times even defending them. And so there is this law of God that has been written on our hearts because we're created in the image of God. There's no other way, I don't think, to explain this. You could say, well, every society has this. Well, every society kind of knows it's not okay just to kill somebody.
Right.
Every society kind of really recognizes that it's not okay to rape and pillage things, even though it happens.
And they'll find ways to justify.
But they also know that there is something inherently wrong in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Someone once said that in the beginning, God created man in his own image, and then man has been trying to repay God the favor ever since. And I think that's part of the problem, is that we try to create God in our image, and yet he's calling us to follow him. If you've not ever entered into a relationship or even just like an inquiry about God, he's revealed something not just in nature but in special revelation called the Scriptures that are given to us by God to help us to understand who he is. And I would just recommend, this would be my recommendation, is you go into the right in the middle, it's the New Testament, and you read the book of John. Just start there, read the book of John. It's a story of Jesus, God's only son, coming to earth to die for you, and it's this incredible story. And at the very least, you'll start to go, wait a second, I didn't know that Jesus said that. Oh, that's where we get that from. Oh, yeah. This is great.
Yeah.
But I think if you read through that, you will have an encounter with your Creator.
Yeah. And the beautiful thing to me about the gospel, which is the good news about Jesus, is that this God who is so high above us, who is so outside of our understanding, was still willing to come down as a human being to die on our behalf. The story of Jesus is a story of God humbling himself to come down to be amongst us finite, broken beings who often convince ourselves that he's not there. And yet he comes and he sacrifices his son, his only son, who's perfect for us. It's a beautiful story. It's a humbling story. It's a story worth looking into and getting to have a better understanding of.
Well, this is Pearls and Swine, and we are so glad that you've been listening to us. I want to just encourage you one more time, open your Bibles. You can go on BibleGateway.com and type in the book of John and just begin to read. You can even listen to it. You don't even have to read it.
For free.
For free. It's pretty awesome. But just engage. If we're right, you kind of want to know God. If we're wrong, not that big of a deal. But it could create a lifetime or an eternity with the one who created you. And we truly believe that. We want that for you.
Yeah, thanks for hanging with us. If you liked what you heard, we would love for you to find us, Evangel Houghton Podcast on Apple Podcasts or Google Play. You can check out the latest Pearls and Swines episodes there. And you can find our previous episodes at evangelup.org as well. Hey, we'll catch you next week.